So first, I'd like to thank Pastor Kit for permitting me this opportunity to share with you this morning a bit of behind the scenes of preparing a biblical storytelling. Now, our sermon series this summer is The Power of One Verse, and we will get to that one verse. There is a quote from George Bernard Shaw that biblical storytellers love to use. He said, there's 50 ways to say the word no. 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 But there's only one way to write it. Scripture primarily was transmitted orally and in community until the last few hundred years. It wasn't until Gutenberg invented the printing press in the 1400s that text previously had been copied by hand. It meant there were limited copies. They were very expensive. Churches may only have been able to afford a few books of the Bible, and a private personal copy was even more rare, both due to the cost and the individual's ability to read. The printing press made the Bible more available, but until literacy was commonplace, did Scripture move from that oral community to personal and silent communication. We gained access to Scripture, but we lost some of the richness of the oral communication. So it's my task as a biblical storyteller to determine which one of those 50 ways to say the words. Words that are authentic and appropriate for that given portion, at least authentic and appropriate for me at that time, for that audience. No two storytellers will tell exactly the same story the same way, yet neither are wrong. Pastor Kit and I thought that today's lectionary portion was particularly appropriate to demonstrate the biblical storyteller processes because it is so familiar. I'm sure any one of you could tell that story. The Good Samaritan has even been woven into our secular culture. In the U.S., there are numerous hospitals named the Good Samaritan Hospital of whatever city. If the news reports, today, a Good Samaritan, we know exactly what happened. Someone stopped and went out of their way to help a stranger. There's a law named the Good Samaritan Law. You may have seen the ads on TV about the opiate crisis and saying, stop and help someone, even if you've broken the law, because the Good Samaritan Law will protect you. We talked about the first aid course coming up, and I hold that certificate. So in Quebec, the law makes it mandatory for me to stop and help someone. It's not an option, it's mandatory. Now, the challenge with familiar passages is that they are so familiar, we may stop truly hearing them. So one of the tenets of biblical storytelling is for us to approach a passage with new eyes, regardless of whether we know it, have told it, or it's new. So in some ways, this passage was more challenging for me because it is so familiar and well-known. In preparing a passage, I read the text before and after the chosen portion. Events leading up may tell me how to say something, and events afterwards may tell me this is a foreshadowing and help guide me in how to tell a story. I will read commentaries. I will read the cultural text of the day to get an idea of what truly was happening. So what I'd like to do now is retell this story, sharing some of the cultural background, some of the potential thoughts of those characters that was going through my mind as I was telling you the story, that how perhaps my body language or tone of voice may have hinted at those underlying thoughts. and I hope to help you hear this very familiar story with new ears. Now, to give you some background, the road from Jerusalem is an 18-mile rocky path. Jerusalem is 2,500 feet above sea level, and Jericho is over 800 feet below sea level. It's a very dangerous road. There are switchbacks, rock slides. It was actually known as the Trail of Blood. As late as the 1930s, travelers were warned not to stop on that road, that there were bandits who would stage rock slides so they could be robbed at gunpoint into the 1930s. Okay. So a man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho, where he fell among the thieves, who stripped and beat him and went away, leaving him half dead. Now, by chance, a priest was going down that road. Oh, dear. Hello? Hello? Are you all right? He looks dead. Talmud says there's a duty to bury the dead. But I'm a Kohen. I'm a priest. My people will think of Torah, Leviticus. They will think me unclean if I touch you. And I don't want to go through the purification ritual. No. You're dead. All of us shalom, rest in peace. And he passed by on the other side. Likewise. Now, I've witnessed this struggle between Torah law and the cultural influence. Yom Kippur, the Jewish Day of Atonement, is one of the highest holy days in the Jewish calendar. And Jews fast from sunup to sundown. I have seen Rabbi Bielefeld beg with people, take your medicine, take your heart medicine. Telling a diabetic, you have to eat, you have to take your insulin. Life is the most important thing in Torah. Yet they've refused. Now, the priest in our story, that's not a profession, that's not a choice. That is hereditary, it is the bloodline. Priests are the descendants of Aaron. And they have particular rules regarding the dead. Now, in ancient times, they were considered unclean if they came within so many paces of a dead body or if their shadow fell on the dead body and they had to go through ritual purification. They were to avoid the presence of a dead body, attending a funeral only if it was their immediate family. Now, in today's world, a Jewish funeral home has a room with the glass wall on one side of the sanctuary. And that is where the priestly bloodline sit to this day. So they're technically not in the room with the body, even though every Jewish funeral is a closed casket. Call it habit, tradition, the opinion of others, peer pressure. We can relate to that. So likewise, the Levite came to the place, and when he saw him, hello? Hello? Are you all right? This could be a trap. Thieves are known to leave their victims by the side of the road to tempt a second victim to stop. They could be hiding. This could be a trap. I could be dead too. And he passed by on the other side. We can relate to self-preservation. Now, we've all heard a joke that started a priest, a minister, and a rabbi. Yeah. That grouping is expected. We would not expect to hear a priest, a minister, and an ISIS terrorist. Or Curly Larry and Osama bin Laden. Jesus' audience would have been similarly programmed. A priest, a Levite, they're waiting. The next one is an Israelite. We know he will come and save the day. So the Samaritan was a double shock. What only was it not expected was the antithesis of what was expected. Samaritan was considered an enemy, not a neighbor, and the very last person to stop and help a Jew. And Samaritans, too, had laws about the dead and potential contamination. But while a Samaritan was traveling, he came near, and when he saw him, he was moved with pity. "Oh, no, you poor fellow, how long have you been here?" He went to him, bandaged his wounds, put oil and wine on them. "May be a good thing you're unconscious right now. I wonder what you would think if you looked up and saw me, a Samaritan, bending over you." Put him on his animal, took him to an inn and took care of him. The next day, he took out 2 denarii, 2 days' wages, gave them to the innkeeper and said, "Take care of him. And when I come back, I'll repay you whatever more you spent." Now, this tells us several things about the Samaritan. He was successful. He could afford to travel with an animal. He not only pulled out 2 days' wages out of his pocket, remember, there were no ATMs, but he ran a tab for the balance. So clearly, he was a frequent visitor at the inn. The innkeeper knew him, knew he was good for it. And as a frequent traveler, he would have known of the dangers on that road. He would have known he was a prime target for the thieves on the road to Jerusalem, from Jerusalem. Yet he stopped. Samaritans had laws regarding the dead and contamination. Yet he stopped. His thoughts were about the victim, not about himself. Now, the sermon series is the power of one verse. And although Jesus told this story focusing on neighbor, the verse that stood out to me this time was, "And they passed by on the other side." Over the centuries of telling this parable, Western culture has tended to paint the priest and the Levite as the bad guys. They're the black hats in this story. They're unsympathetic characters. We're not like them. We can't relate to them. This parable doesn't apply to us. I hope by sharing some of their potential thoughts behind their actions that I've made them more human. Perhaps we can see a bit of ourselves in them. Although we may truly care about someone in need, hasn't there been a time when we've passed by on the other side? There is a handout, a little leaflet with some thoughts and questions if you would like to ponder these passages yourself further at home, or possibly to use it as a jumping off point to help you look at other scriptures in the future with some new eyes. Thanks be to God.